Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome to Richard Rossi Live. So grateful to be back on air, and I want to thank all of you for your emails and letters. This show began on WPIT 101.5 and on air 50,000 watt station. And after a sabbatical, I'm eternally grateful for your support to be back on air. And I want to welcome all the Ed Wood fans from around the globe today. I'm so thrilled to have my friend Alan Doshna, who will be back in a moment, associate producer of a film, The Haunted World of Edward D. Wood, Jr. And he got to hang out with Ed Wood's posse in the making of this film, Bela Lugosi Jr., Paul Marco, Vampire, a lot of the legends all got together for the premiere of his documentary. He's a writer, a very talented actor, and kind of multimedia artist. And so we'll be back in a moment to discuss The Haunted World of Ed Wood, Jr. Welcome back to Richard Rossi Live. And are you there, Alan?
Yes.
Wow, so you're back in New York?
Yes, uh-huh. Yep,
and, well, thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much for inviting me, and I'm looking forward to it very much.
Yeah. Now, if my recollection is correct, you discovered Ed Wood as a kid, right, growing up in New York.
Right. They would show the vintage horror films on Chiller Theater and sometimes run them for a week. And one of them that I saw that made an impression on me was Bride of the Monster.
Mm.
And I didn't know the title of it at the time, but eventually over the years I did find out what it was. I learned more about Ed Wood.
Well, that's wonderful you discovered him as a child. And do you remember your feelings or the impression you had as a boy watching it?
Well, it did make a deep impression on me. In fact, one of the times, I actually saw it a few times, and I remember it was very exciting. And there was later that night, one evening, I had a white shirt on, and I was pretending to be Dr. Eric Voronoff, played by Bela Lugosi, and I got in my bed and I was fighting my covers like he did with the octopus in the film towards the end, and I was really kind of going a little overboard, and I ended up getting spanked by my mom, and I just felt I was still kind of in character for Eric Voronoff, and so I just sort of, this is no way to treat the great Dr. Eric Voronoff. So,
and that's the film where Bella does his great monologue that Ed Wood wrote. That in the film where Johnny Depp portrays Ed Wood, they have a scene on Hollywood and Vine where he goes into that whole home, I have no home, huh?
Yes, it was a very personal monologue because he'd been going through a lot of personal trials at the time. And as far as with his divorce and, you know, financial matters and just his career in general, so he put a lot into that monologue.
Mm. Yeah, I noticed in the film that you were involved in producing that Bela Lugosi Jr. was involved, and it seemed like his initial reaction was a little negative, like you felt Ed would bring him down, but then I thought I heard you said later that he softened a bit on that. What was your thought about that?
Right, I think over time, his feelings began to change because he could see the quality of the film. And as he met all the various people, you know, over time, he could see that there was a, you know, genuine appreciation for his father. And as I understand it, he later met, also at the time, the Tim Burton movie was had just come out, and he had some issues, I guess, as far as how his father was portrayed, but as I understand it, he later saw the film and met with Martin Landau and they became friends. So it was a gradual thing that occurred.
And well, what an amazing experience that you, of all places, what it was it a church where you met Crawford John Thomas? Who is that story true?
Yes, right. Well, what it was is that we had attended the same services out in Southern California, actually in Pasadena, and we were in a speech club together, which was patterned after the Toastmasters International program, and we got up and individually got up and gave our icebreakers, and, you know, I had mentioned that I was an aspiring actor and fan of, you know, old movies and everything, and in his icebreaker, he had mentioned that he also had been an actor, and he had actually produced a 16-millimeter film back when he was a young man, which he was very proud of, and he mentioned a few times. And so occasionally I would see him at services, and he would approach me and ask me, you know, how's your career going? And so he had an interest in that, and we would chat from time to time. And then there was one particular day when we were talking that he happened to bring up that the guy who directed this 16-millimeter movie that he did went on to direct Bela Lugosi's last movie. And at that point, of course, you know, alarms began to go off and red lights flash, and I thought that couldn't be Ed Wood, but yep, it was. From that point on, we began to talk more about things, and he began planning a little bit for a possible project. He encouraged me to talk with people that I came in contact with that might be interested. And see, the film was only 20 minutes long, and it had never, backing up a little bit, you know, he had received an advance on his inheritance from his father, and he wanted to use that to do commercials, which for TV, which was just, you know, coming into being at the time. And he was an actor at a theater group with Ed Wood, and Ed Wood had heard about it, his coming into money, and so he encouraged him to put the money into a short feature, which they did, and they got one of the photographers had worked on Gone with the Wind, and they used some of the people from the theater group, and but the thing was, it wasn't, he had never directed a film, had no training, and it just didn't amount to much, and he couldn't attract any interest as far as distribution goes, so he kind of took off from there and kind of left Crawford holding the bag. So for 40-odd years or so, it was in Crawford's garage, and up till that time when he began to hear about, you know, the popularity of the film. And so the Ed Wood phenomenon. And so I began, you know, approaching people and trying to come up with ideas for what could be done with it.
Well, I really love what you all did with this restoration of this short film, Edward D. Wood Jr.'s first film, Crossroads of Laredo, is a DVD extra on the haunted world of Edward D. Wood Jr. If you're listening out there and you haven't seen this documentary, it's available, you know, everywhere where you buy DVDs, on Amazon and everything. And this short that was shot up, I think, at one of the movie ranches, wasn't it?
Right, up in Iverson Ranch in, I think it was Saugus. And now, before we actually did the restoration, we had considered various options for the film, and I was kind of intrigued with the film Targets, which was one of Peter Bogdanovich's first films, where he took some footage of an old Boris Karloff movie and shot with him just to for contract reasons, to finish off a contract with him for Roger Corman. for Karloff, and he ended up with the movie, which was an amazing movie for its time, Targets. I don't know if you've seen that. Are you familiar with
Yeah,
that?
There's a lot of parallels between those two films, isn't there?
Right, and so that's what I was hoping to do, but then as time went on, we both kind of had a little different vision of what the film could be, and looking at it in retrospect, I think the decisions that were made were the correct ones, but we went through a period where we were evaluating different options, and so Crawford, at the time, Civil War was popular. It was a groundbreaking series on PBS, so he wanted to do something along the lines of documentary. And because the film itself was just a short film, so it was kind of neither fish nor fowl, so we wanted to, do something that would, be appropriate, best presented. So that was, how it eventually came about.
Yeah, and I think you can see, you mentioned the Targets. You can see elements in that were like nascent signs of Last Picture Show. And in Streets of Laredo, I think we see a lot of the Ed Wood qualities, the ability to improvise and use what was around them. There's a story about they needed a coffin. They didn't have one. He just grabs a cardboard box and kind of wets it and sprays it. And you see his almost childlike ingenuity early on, I think, in that film, huh?
Right, yeah. And in fact, the story about the restoration, that when we finally got a video copy of Crawford made, we showed it on one of Crawford's TVs that happened to have a bulb went out on it, and the screen was like a light brown coloring, and watching the black and white film with the sepia type tone, it just gave it a quality that it didn't have in just the black and white. So we eventually did it in sepia color on the DVD.
It's wonderful how those little accidents contribute to the creative process, huh?
Right, exactly. It's kind of playing the moment of what comes along and making, kind of going with it.
You've been involved in something else with Paul Marco, the Kelton series, and for probably a lot of our listeners today are Ed Wood fans, and they know that Paul Marco, was in three of the Ed Wood films as Kelton the cop, and was a dear friend of Ed's, and you're working on finishing it's a series of, is it three shows with him playing the character again that you are also acting in?
Right, yes. In fact, he used to like to refer to his films with Ed Wood as the Kelton Trilogy. So I don't know if Ed Wood thought the same, quite from the same perspective, but what happened was I stayed in touch with Paul over the years after we had done Haunted World, and would stop in occasionally to see him. And there's one period of time where I was trying to get in touch with him, and it seemed like he disappeared. And, people knew he was around. But finally I learned that he had fallen and broke his hip. And so he was being, transported from rehabilitation centers, and so, but finally I was able to catch up with him, and I spent some time with him during the rehabilitation process, and at one point he told me, I still feel like I have at least one more film. So it just so happened at the time, previous to that, I had worked with a Russian rock musician who was living in the U.S., whose name is Vasily Shumov, and he was also a video artist, and I had worked with him on a short video about a year or two before that, and I stayed in touch with him, and then he around that time, I contacted him, and he told me that he was going to be shooting another music video, but this one would be a tribute to film noir, which he was a big fan of. He was going to call it The Dark Corner.
Mm.
So he told me to come down and audition for him, which I did, and I got a part in it. And so, you know, I would tell Paul about this, and so we would kind of go back and forth. And, you know, it occurred to me that, you know, all of the characters in the video were actually more kind of low-life characters, and that there wasn't a police element in it. So I forget who I mentioned it to first, but I had asked Vasily if he would consider the possibility of having Paul in the film, you know, to add that, you know, aspect to it. And so he thought it was a good idea. So eventually they got together, and, you know, over a period of time, they came to an agreement about, you know, how they would do it. And so it became Kelton's Dark Corner. So he came over, Vasily brought his equipment and green screen over to Paul's apartment and shot some scenes with him. And later he came over and recorded a narration for it. He showed him some of the scenes from the film with the other cast members. And Paul did an amazing job. And anyone that, berates him or, you know, diminishes his ability as an actor, you know, just needs to see that. And, the final result in the film, and he, you know, I thought he did, you know, a really great job. And it's an art film. It's kind of like it's got a dreamlike quality. Or
is it available yet, Alan, or is it not yet available?
It's not available on DVD yet, but what it was released on Russian MySpace in edited form. So it is, you know, in incremental form still there online, but it's not really the way it was meant to be shown. But it did get a lot of recognition. Vasily went back to Russia to promote his new CD, and he began showing the film at his concerts, and it got a very good reception, and that's how it led to the arrangement with MySpace Russia, and it was voted Video of the Month by Russian Maxim magazine, and he was nominated for Best Musician for it later, and so was shown at a museum exhibit, but it was never, we were hoping it would eventually find its way to the U.S., but it's just been, within the past year, we've been working on getting a distribution for them. We've both been kind of busy, but I'm beginning to make some progress with that, and so hopefully we'll actually get a DVD release or Blu-ray.
Yeah, well, I'm sure it'll get out there. There's so many of us that love Kelton the Cop, and, you know, speaking of which, wow, I think about the lives of these, you know, people that were in these iconic Ed Wood movies, and there's a certain sadness to it. One of my students wrote Paul's obituary for The Trades, and, you know, so many of them struggled. Like Paul, for instance, was, you know, doing some wardrobe on shows. And I remember an anecdote of someone that was on a set where they were talking about Ed Wood this and Ed Wood that. And Paul just casually mentioned that, you know, he was Kelton the Cop, and they were shocked. And so a lot of these folks became kind of invisible, like Vampire as an example. My wife and I are friends of a woman that just passed, Gloria Paul, who was Voluptua and was also on TV at the same time. And she was telling us how she would literally have to bring casseroles and food to Milo Nurmi so that she could, you know, not starve to death. You know, what are your feelings about some of these figures in their older years and their post-Ed Wood years? And you got to spend time with them. What are some of your thoughts about, you know, whichever ones come to mind? I know you got to be with Paul, Vampira, many of the others.
Right. Well, the first person of the Edward Stock Company that I really met was Conrad Brooks, who remains a good friend to this day. And he's living on the East Coast now, and he still does conventions, and he's gotten some good attention from his involvement. He likes to say he wished it happened when he was younger, but it's, better late than never. But he still is active in films out there and conventions, and so he and he actually has directed a number of films himself. So his first being a film called Mystery and Shadows. I don't know if you've ever seen that, but it's
Conrad, did he go back home? Because I think he was from, was it Michigan or somewhere like that?
Right, Maryland. And
Maryland.
West Virginia right now. And so he's doing well. And Vampira actually was kind of an interesting character. She was pretty much the same off-screen off-screen, maybe that's a Freudian slip, off-screen as she was on. And originally she didn't want to do the documentary because she felt, just had a general feeling of being exploited, and there was a issue about her character being infringed on by Elvira and this and that. So she just kind of wanted to withdraw from the whole situation, but our director, Brett Thompson, who I wanted to mention as well, who, if it wasn't for Brett, this film wouldn't have come together, because he was the one who brought all the elements.
He did a great job, and, shout out to Brett, that just the artistic feel to it. I love all the Ed Wood documentaries, including the early one, one of the first ones. I think it was Mark Carducci, who since passed, but he did one that was a little more bare utilitarian video, which was great, though. It had a lot of great stuff in it. But Brett really added an aesthetic to the way you guys had. You had like a set piece for each of these stars that kind of fit them, didn't you?
Right, exactly, yeah. And he also went to, he was a friend of Tim Burton's when he went to the California Institute of the Arts, and he was very enthusiastic about it, and there were a number of people that were hesitant about it, but he was able to get Vampira interested. And there's a kind of an interesting anecdote about Vampira that relates to Dolores Fuller as well. I used to go to a restaurant in Pasadena that was a 50s-style restaurant, but there was a waitress that worked there that looked almost exactly like a Dolores Fuller in her Slender Glenda period. And this was right around the time we're going to have the showing of the film at the New Art Theater. And I thought of the possibility of having her come to the premiere, and sometimes, they have, shows like that, they'll have people come dressed as characters. And so I had mentioned it to a few people. I'd approach Dolores and Vampira about that. Well, it happened that I had called Vampira, and I was telling her about the upcoming premiere and who all was going to be there. And so I just happened to mention that casually, that this was something we were considering. Really? Oh, I see. How nice. And so, we talked, and it was, a nice, pleasant conversation, and I hung up. And then about a day later, I get a call from Brett saying, "What did you say to Vampira?" And I don't know what. We just had a nice conversation. She said she's not coming into the premiere. And as it turned out, when we kind of got to the bottom of it, was that she probably felt a little bit like her, attention was going to be taken away from her, and she kind of wanted to, and she actually was, in some ways, the star of the show, and so she didn't want to come. And unfortunately, she didn't attend the premiere, although she later did attend some of the screenings afterwards, and we did become friends later. But
So she didn't want to be upstaged by a younger vampire impersonator.
Well, it was actually Dolores Fuller lookalike.
So I
just happened to mention, well, who is going to be there? So it was, some of the cast members, and I just happened to, Dolores would be there as well as I had brought it up, but.
Wow.
So those two, that was kind of a double-barreled threat, I guess.
I see. Well, it's something, she, I can see where in a certain aspect she may have been a little prickly. It's such a strange thing. We had Kevin Shawn Michaels on the show last week that directed a film, Vampire the Movie, and he brought up in that film an interesting point, which I'm sure you've also said and thought of, is, here she does this one day on what she sees as kind of a schlocky film, Plan 9, in the 50s. I forget when it was shot, I think around 56. But she does that one day's work, takes the bus there down to Quality Studios on Santa Monica and Western, comes back, and that's that. And now, for 50 years later, that's like what everyone asks her about. So it's probably a little, probably a little strange. I mean, I guess sometimes these iconic moments in life happen, and we just don't know it at the time, huh?
Right. And in fact, I just happened to notice on the internet the other day that there's an article posted on Salon recently, which said that she was actually the model for the villainous Maleficent of Sleeping Beauty fame, and which is going to be, there's actually going to be a live action movie starring Angelina Jolie coming out soon.
Wow.
And she definitely, back in her day, also being the hostess of her TV show, which they're actually starting to locate prints of it at the time when Mark Tarducci and when we were doing our film as well, we were trying to locate them, but eventually they are coming to the surface. So
is really something. You wrote a beautiful piece, Alan, I read in a religious magazine about how Ed Wood and Plan 9 to you is kind of a metaphor or a parable of the grace of God. Do you remember that?
Right. Yeah.
Do you mind elaborating on that? That was so, I loved it.
Right. Well, what it was is that actually shortly before he passed away, I did an interview with Dr. Lynn Lemon, who appeared in Plan 9 and also was one of the investors for the film. And unfortunately, he passed away before it was published, and I had approached a church magazine to see. I had just done an interview with Richard Kiel about his religious background, and it went over very well. And so the editor asked me if I had anything else that I had done along those lines, and so I told him about the Dr. Lemon interview, and so I sent it to him, and he liked it, but he kind of wanted to use that as a springboard for the film itself. He had a very good sense of humor, the editor, and he just got a kick out of it and wanted to do something. He saw that there was a potential there for doing something like that, of being as an analogy of human condition and being cut off from God and feeling like you're the worst of the worst, and that there was an analogy. Of course, there was the Golden Turkey Awards, and he was voted worst director and blah blah and everything. So, or Ed Wood was, and so he thought there was a possibility of an analogy there. And I wrote something, and it was amazing because some of the top writers and ministers of the church had a hand in writing it. So it's a little bit edited version of, or altered version of it, but it, I mean, it's basically the same thing, but just that there's the aspect of, you know, there are times in life when we feel like, you know, it's hopeless and, you know, we're no good, you know, for anything, and but that's in terms of you know, the grace of God, we're, you know, we are made right and whole again, and that there's you know, we opportunity to live a new life. And so they you know, we all collaborated, and that's what we, you know, came up with. And it was a I thought it was a very brave of them to do that, and I think it's very true, and that the analogy they're making, but it's not the normal analogy that we necessarily be, you know, would always fit a magazine. So I admired their, you know, willingness to do that, step out, venture out.
Well, I've enjoyed talking so much, and wow, we've already went over time. We'll definitely have you back, Alan. I know you have some celebrity bios you're working on and more. I guess we can reveal more about that when they're ready to go. And it's been so wonderful chatting with you, and I agree with you that it is a miraculous grace story to, you know, Ed Wood is homeless and a failure in his lifetime and now has such a huge cult following him. You know, it would have been nice for him, like Conrad said, if it would have come a little earlier for him and Kathy, his wife. But thank God that we're appreciating these wonderful cult classics now. And thanks so much for coming on today, Alan.
You're welcome.
And we'll talk again really soon.
All righty.
And thank you, everybody, for listening. And thank you, Blog Talk Radio, for your patience, you know, as I'm going a moment over time. But wow, fascinating subject, Edward Wood. And until next time, and I'll talk really quickly because we're out of time, but we have another wonderful show coming up. Our next show is this Friday, 12 p.m. Pacific time. Kevin Miller, director of a controversial film, Hellbound, will be with us. Until next time, even if you feel like sometimes you're the worst of the worst or things aren't going well for you, it's going to turn around for you just like it did for Ed Wood, Jr.